three successful applicants. Jim Walgenbach is from North Carolina State University. He's working on he's the project director for the Brown Marmorated Stinkbug Project. Ryan Warner is from Michigan State University, and he is the project director for a stevia project. So if our Hawaiian colleague is still here, stevia is not a very big crop either right now. And then we have Bimu Patil from Texas A&M University, and he is he's a plant breeder working with melons, and he's going to talk to us. So I've asked each one of them to address a specific topic, and then we'll throw it open for questions. So Jim, why don't you go ahead and start?
Thank you, Tom, for inviting me to participate in this. The project that I'm the PD for is management of the brown marmorated stink bug in the United States and specialty crops. And this is a continuation project. There was a project from 2011 to 2016. And then this one is funded from 2016 to 2021, I guess it is. And I was surprised to realize after the meeting we were at earlier this week how many of the projects are continuation projects that were successful the first time and then were successful in the second round of funding as well. I don't know how three rounds goes, Tom, but any event. So we had a very successful first project. It was very fairly large. It was focused primarily in the mid-Atlantic area of the United States, where the problem initially started in 2010. And from that, there was a large number of publications. There were over 100 refereed publications, a lot of extension people involved in the project, so a lot of extension outputs, a great website. I don't know how many of you visited that, stopbmsb.org. It was a very successful project. The second one, we obviously had to differentiate. And the way we did that primarily is by expanding the project to the western United States, where the stink bug has become more of an issue in recent years, particularly Washington State, and California. And California, obviously, with the nut crops, and this is a pest there, is very serious. They're concerned about that. Another way we did this was kind of redirect the focus of our project. Initially, we were looking at understanding the biology of this insect in the mid-Atlantic area, developing monitoring programs, and that primarily involved identifying the pheromone and looking at different trap components. So we came up with a monitoring system. And then third was to provide basically emergency style management tactics. And these were primarily insecticide focused projects. And one thing that evolved from this is a major crop in many tree fruits. And about the only type of insecticides that are controlling this are pyrethroids, which can disrupt your biological control programs, which are very important in tree fruit systems, particularly with mites, scales, woolly apple aphids, things of that nature. So with the application of these pyrethroids, we've incited a lot of secondary pest problems. So the focus of this next project was to, again, expand it to the western United States and just the mid-Atlantic, or to the middle part of the country, the Great Lakes region, and also to kind of have a better understanding of the landscape ecology of this pest in different regions. And hopefully from that, develop models that could predict the risk of specialty crops in different areas based upon climate, the floral community in that area, host plant availability, things of that nature. But the major focus of this is biological control. And right now there's a lot of work going on with, it's basically classical biological control. The USDA, Kim Homer, initially brought in some parasitoids from China, which he's had in quarantine. Subsequently, adventive populations, which I wasn't really sure what an adventive parasitoid was, but the same parasitoid that he was looking at in quarantine appeared in nature in the United States. Initially, we all said, good job, Kim, you released it. But genetic studies subsequently indicated that they are different, and this has showed up not only in the eastern United States, but also in Oregon, as well as near Vancouver, Washington as well. So they're out there and they're expanding. So right now there's a lot of work that's going on where we're doing redistribution of this parasitoid in different areas where it's been detected. And so biological control is a major focus, not only of adventive populations with the Chinese parasitoid, commonly called the samurai wasp, but also with native natural enemies as well. And then third, we're looking at developing management programs that are not so dependent on insecticides, but management programs that take into account the behavior of the pest, as well as the ecology of it, and programs that are focused on preserving natural enemies. So altered insecticide use patterns. And what these involve are, for instance, our attract and kill approaches, where we're using the pheromone to attract the stink bugs to killing stations outside of the crop. That's has a lot of promise right now. Border sprays, because it's kind of a peripheral area crop. They invade from wooded areas. Trap cropping, things of that nature. So, and then we also have, from the original program, had a very good infrastructure. I talked about the stopbmsb.org, a great website. We're still using that. It's been changed a lot. And we're working with the Northeast IPM Center as a major component of our outreach program. And they're getting a good chunk of money to do this, and they are well equipped to do great extension work and outreach work. So that, combined with the fact that almost all of the PIs are have research extension components, really helps with our output or our extension component as well. And needless to say, we also have an economic component where we're looking at the economics of these new management strategies. And Tom also asked me to mention a little bit about the administrative component of this. This is a very large project. We have 17 different institutions. There's 41 co-PIs. Now, not all of those are intimately involved with it. I'd probably say about 25 to 26 are really focusing in on it. But still, it's a lot of people to manage and a large area to cover. So the way we've dealt with this is we have regional directors. So we have five different regions of the country: the Pacific Northwest, the West, the Great Lakes, the Mid-Atlantic, and the Southeast. And then we also have the USDA group as a separate component. So we have six project directors, and we have conference calls probably two or three times a year when everything comes up to make sure we're all on the same page. And we also had kind of a unique approach in terms of our stakeholder advisory panel meeting. We have one national one where we meet once a year, but then we also have regional stakeholder advisory panels where we meet once a year as well, because obviously different regions are in different scales of where the pest is in terms of its pest status, the grower's education in terms of where they are in terms of how to manage it. So things need to be tailored for each region. We've kind of taken that into account as well. And then, as you would expect, we have institutional leaders, which in each institution is responsible. One person is responsible for the budget for everybody, as well as getting reports into me. And developing the reports can be very challenging with there's 18 reports coming in, but they're very long. And so we finally got a system after a couple of years to kind of distill this down to what goes into the re-report, and we can get that. We also have objective leaders. So each objective and sub-objectives, we have leaders of those who are responsible for running conference calls every year. We have a conference call at the beginning and the end of each year to plan for the coming year, as well as to summarize our results before we meet for the stakeholder advisory panel meeting. And then we also have an extension committee, which we meet a couple of times a year via conference call to talk about what our priority should be for stopbmsb.org in terms of new material, as well as discussing what we're doing at the local level. So it's worked pretty well. The stakeholder advisory panel, again, I mentioned the regional ones as well as the national one. The national one consists of at least two members from each region that are also in the national one, as well as some more national stakeholders. So that's a quick summary of how our project works. And up to this point in time, all I can say is it's taking a lot more time than I anticipated, but it's a lot of fun. So I'm enjoying it a lot. So any questions?
Well, let's take questions and tell everybody to go present. Hello, I'm Ryan Warner from Michigan State University, and Tom asked me to address engaging a stakeholder community and building a stakeholder advisory panel, particularly for a minor or emerging crop. And I think that it does represent some unique challenges, but some of the aspects are similar regardless of the crop type you're working with. And I think one of the unique challenges is that whereas, say, citrus growers may recognize that to some extent they're in competition with each other, they also recognize that as if the citrus industry does well, that's good for all of them. If you have a new or emerging crop, you tend to have some large players that feel like this is an opportunity for them to dominate this new market. And so people are very tight-lipped, a lot of proprietary information, and it's a little harder to tease them out. And some of our stakeholders are Coke and Pepsi. So Coke and Pepsi are notorious for not wanting to be in the same room together, let alone share information. And so in this process of engaging with stakeholders, I learned a very important term that really kind of drove the focus of the development of our project, and that term is non-competitive space. Right, so what are the main issues addressing the industry as a whole, all the sectors of that industry that are best serviced by a publicly funded effort? In other words, we don't want all of these companies investing resources in solving the same problems over and over and over again for a reason that is not going to give them any competitive advantage. Okay, and I think an example of this might be, say, the generation of a genome sequence for a new crop. Now, it's getting cheaper and cheaper every day, so this will likely continue, but there's no reason for each company to develop a genome sequence on their own for their crop of interest. A genome sequence doesn't give you anything directly. It's how you utilize it. It's what germplasm you have to take advantage of that information that is really the value of that genome sequence. So by generating a publicly available, publicly funded genome sequence, there's more accountability. We've got a community of users who can point out, oh, I think there's maybe an assembly error in this portion. And it just makes the tool better overall and avoids a lot of reduplication of effort. So one of the things that an advantage I think that we had is that not only did we engage stakeholders very early, but I think it's probably not inaccurate to say that stakeholders actually initiated what ultimately became our project. So I'd been working on stevia at MSU for 5 or 6 years. There were some pockets of research down at NC State in the pathology and breeding and genetics field, but there was nothing really bringing us together. And so I expressed interest to a stakeholder in generating some kind of a publicly funded community effort to bring the stakeholder community together. And they said, okay, we're really interested in that. And they actually funded a meeting to bring us together. So we had 2 planning meetings before we submitted a planning proposal, after which we had 2 more planning meetings, after which we submitted a full proposal. So I think our proposal was in pretty good shape by the time it went forward because it had been vetted so many times. And during that time, it really allowed us to identify the key stakeholders and kind of build our stakeholder network because, you know, it wasn't obvious who to necessarily include right from the beginning. I'd had an SCRI project about 7 or 8 years ago that was utilizing genomics-assisted breeding tools in the floriculture industry. And so our stakeholders were primarily floriculture breeders. It was pretty easy to identify them and get them together. Well, now we're working with a crop that involves breeders, farmers, ingredient suppliers, food and beverage manufacturers, and consumers. Those are our stakeholder groups. And so trying to coalesce a project that services all of those stakeholder groups became challenging. And I think that just having those informal discussions before we said, all right, we've got 6 months to put a proposal together, was critical for the development of what ultimately became the project. So I would, as has been repeated many times, start early as you can. Don't wait for an RFA to come out and say, okay, we need to put a project together. It's like, what is the project you want to put together? And then take the time to develop that project the way that once it goes forward, it's very clean. Okay. And so again, yeah, identifying those non-competitive space issues that will help the farmers, that will help the ingredient suppliers, that will help the food and beverage manufacturers. And another way that we're trying to utilize our stakeholder advisory panel is to foster integrated discussion amongst our stakeholder groups. So get our farmers talking to the ingredient supplier. Okay, how does the production impact the efficiency of extraction of the compounds that stevia produces that are utilized? And then, you know, we also involve a lot of consumers as well. So what is it that consumers want from a stevia-containing product? Those of you who have tried stevia-containing products right now probably recognize that they really don't taste very good. Like, they're very sweet, but they're also bitter and have a licorice-y aftertaste. Well, the plant produces a lot of sweet-tasting compounds. And so part of our work is sensory analysis with trained consumer panels. Well, which combination of glycosides is most desirable? That's going to feed into our breeding efforts, our marker trait association efforts, develop markers for those consumer desired things. So I think, you know, just integrating all those together is a really important function. And to kind of piggyback on something that Sarah said, don't set up your objectives so that if one fails, you're screwed and the rest of them you can't do. So our objectives all complement each other and feed into each other, but no one objective is dependent on any of the other objectives. So if that's a more general piece of advice, I guess, not related to stakeholder panels specifically. But yeah, I think that's how I would approach it. And I think a lot of this is probably relevant even to established crops. Like, what are the big questions that are best serviced by a publicly funded effort where you can actually get Coke and Pepsi in the same room, and we have representatives from Coke and Pepsi on our stakeholder board. So we did it. I think that'll be the first, you know, headline on our accomplishment summary. Just kidding. But yeah, I think I'll keep my comments brief so we can open it up to discussion, hopefully. But that's how we approached generating a stakeholder community for calling it a minor crop would be generous. In the U.S., it was an almost non-existent crop. It is an emerging crop. But yeah, a lot of challenges associated with that. So.
Good morning, the last analyst. My name is Bimu Patil from Texas A&M. So first of all, I would like to thank the patience the program director and Megan has on some of these calls you get from a lot of writers, proposal writers. So we call you guys with some frustration all the time, right? So we appreciate your patience. At the same time, also the panelists, because panelists also have to have patience, particularly for the resubmissions. So Tom asked me to talk about how the persistence pays off. And I think this is an example what the Michigan colleague has faced, and I face the same challenges. So in my case, I think I was fortunate that I was involved in some of these large grants before, and over the 25 years career, I was successful in getting a lot of grants, almost close to 16.5 million, but several of them were repeated submissions. We didn't succeed the first time. Some of them were successful, but several of them I was able to secure only after third or fourth submission. This one took longer than that. But I think the lessons I can say based on my experience is, since I involved with the stakeholders in Texas, particularly for the last 15 years, the vegetable industry is always backing whatever we do. And that doesn't mean we just take our idea and just go to them. We seek their advice all the time, not just because of the SCRI. In fact, early on, I was involved in the SCRI development with United Fresh in Colorado. We had meetings on vegetable industry needs. So I knew what is the SCRI, basically. So the suggestion I can make from my experience is, believe in yourself. Because if you do not believe in your idea, then it's hard to convince the industry. And I think once the industry buy in your idea, I think basically you engage them throughout your process. So it's not just the first year when you get the failure. You involve them second year, you have meetings, and that's what we had to do. Because if the stakeholders really still need it, then what we did is, to make the idea very fruitful and useful, we did 3 surveys in the national level. So, and then the third year of our submission, we got really excellent observations from the reviewers. Like, 2 reviewers said excellent, excellent. 1 reviewer said outstanding. I was frustrated. But even I met with Tom in D.C. here, and I said, oh, maybe I may get the funding, because he suggested just submit. And I really appreciate your inspiration for that. So I submitted. But you'll see what happened following year. I submitted for the pre-proposal. The pre-proposal was rejected. This is the 4th year. Then the reason I'm saying is the persistence, right? So I was almost losing the hopes, and my collaborators from 7 states were almost saying, BMO is not going to get the money, so we should not. So, but the way we had to do is, particularly this is happening always in the Christmas time, so it's hard to convince the collaborators to help anything to do it. So the goal is, you have to be persistent, but you have to first believe in what you're doing. And I think I knew that this is going to be successful because we put in a lot of effort, and there's a lot of backing from the industry from 7 states. All the melon industry was helping us. Second thing I learned over the persistence period is, check around the country who are funded. Is there any competition? Is there any overlap? I found out that there's another melon proposal funded in Michigan State. So when I talked to Tom, of course, we made it clear that it is excluding watermelon. We just said every melon and excluding watermelon. So we didn't want to compete. Then we also shared with them, with the other grantees successful, what are the things we can co-share. So then we got a letter from them. So sometimes, the as you know, that the success rate is less and becoming lesser and lesser because the competition is more, knowledge is more. But then also we have to make sure that we're not competing with the same crop as Megan mentioned. So we took that approach. We approached the other successful grantees. Okay, what all we can share once you get the receive the grant. So they gave a two or three good letters from different angle. So that helped to go again persistent. So what I'm saying here in just general is to get this kind of a grant is continue the communication with the stakeholders and collaborators, because sometimes collaborators lose the hopes. It is hard because when there's no money and they're doing some preliminary work sometimes without any money. So what I did as a central director in Texas A&M, I helped some of the collaborators to get some preliminary. In fact, to get this $4.6 million, I spent at least from our center about $100,000 to get a lot of preliminary results with the collaborators in Arizona, because this is a major problem from the industry. In 2011, we had a major problem with the food safety issues in melons. So how do we address that? Texas A&M administrator saying, why are you spending money to the Arizona? I said, do you want more money later? So that's how I convinced our administrators to spend money to get some results. So those preliminary results help to address some of the reviewer questions. And as you said, the Michigan colleague said, yes, I was also frustrated because we said something last year and they said, now this year is different to your comments. So, and I'm in the same boat, but you face the challenge. But can we just take the frustration and just show the anger in the response to reviewer, or just can we just calm down a little bit and address that in a different way so that we'll be keeping them happy, and how we can keep them happy so we get successful. So finally, just to make it brief, is there are challenges always in this kind of situation. And I think what you commented, what Tom mentioned, the response, I would like to see that happening. If you're really outstanding, and is there any way to make those categories in a separate ballgame so that the reverse will be doing the same thing? Otherwise, we'll be definitely not facing that same challenge. So hopefully, the program director will take that into serious way, and maybe some kind of changes will happen, at least not necessarily in RFA, but some kind of change. So that way, we don't really lose the interest. Because industry also can be patient enough, and then they also sometimes lose. We're providing letters and we're also meeting with you every year twice, and it's not getting successful. So in fact, I'll just tell you how strong our industry was. One time, the last pre-proposal when it was rejected, one of the reviewers from the industry panel said the good quality melon is not good for the country. It could be an oversight by the industry panel, but we didn't take that as a negative thing. I had an industry meeting from all the seven states. They said, Bimu, we're going to put that in our letters. There are five industry members. They put the same exact quoted comment of the industry panel, and they put that, and that really went through very well. So they said, every industry in the melon industry, at least they want good melons, because like current melons are not good quality, and they want to have good safety issues addressed through breeding. So they said, we need this project. So they made it, of course, in a friendly way that this has to be funded. So we basically, what I'm saying is, involve your stakeholders constantly so that you can kind of, your frustration can be kind of passed on to the industry, so you can get some more energy by that way. So that's the way I think persistence pays off. And I think in the last panel, what they said is, we had only 1 month after the pre-proposal is approved, they said you had to do another survey. We did already three surveys. So this is, again, industry wanted another survey. So how do you get the IRB approval, everything? You know what I mean by IRB approval. To do the survey, I had only 1 month. So I'm, again, believe in persistence and continue working on it. So I talked to our Texas A&M guys. This is what happened. You have an old IRB. We're going to do a survey. Can you approve this in 15 days? It is a little bit challenging, but we got approved. So we did another survey in 1 month. We did another just to address every comment of the relevant statement, because if I didn't address all of those, and they asked us to add three more states. So the good thing is I knew the Eastern Cantaloupe Association from Georgia president. He was involved in the SCRF, like to start with 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So he helped. Okay, I'm going to be part of that. So he even convinced their scientists to be part of this proposal. But the budget was already finalized with the pre-proposal. Remember that. It was a challenge for me to sacrifice some of the current collaborators' budget to work with the three more states. So that's what the persistence. So it's basically, we believe in persistence, take out the frustration, and then things will work out. So with that, I think I'll conclude my talk.
Very good. Thank you.